Thanks, Charlie, good job.
All right, well, I'll get behind it, so you know how we're doing here, to catch that, all right.
Yeah, it's all, it's functioning, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I think it'll be pretty good, it should pick up this level, it should then, pick up conversation across the table, which would be more direction.
Well, you covered about a third of us.
Looking for signs of life, is it? Anything there?
Fantastic, spread of trees.
It boggles the mind and the communication system.
Yes.
I don't know who else we might expect, so I think the best thing to do would be to go ahead and begin.
I left the doors open, Charlie, and when we run out of coffee, I'll go make another pot.
Or anyone else? Or
no, thanks.
I think one way to begin might be just to refer back to some of the correspondence that we have seen between Senator Stevens and Dr. Wood, and perhaps ask you just to review, first of all, the telecommunications provision that Senator Stevens talked about in evidently proposed legislation or a proposed program. Mm-hmm. That would aid colleges and universities in setting up telecommunications programs. And then this interim
study
proposal or interim measure that the university might pursue while this other's prepare.
Well, we'd have to put this in the perspective of the national problem. The telecommunications problem in the United States is steadily gone from bad to worse to catastrophe, and I don't know what comes after that, but we certainly passed that. The regulation and control and use of communication systems has just gotten out of hand. And there have been studies that have been going on for about 20 years, one sort or another, all suggesting that the federal government really needs a new approach to the problem. The president has decided to act on this issue, and reorganization plan number one for 1970 has gotten past the Congress. As you may be aware, the president is allowed to propose a reorganization of the executive branch, and then the Congress has 90 days in which to veto it. If they don't, it goes into effect. They did not take any action on the reorganization plan, and momentarily, we expect the official statement, which comes in the form of an executive order, reconstituting the management of telecommunications. There will be a new office in the White House known as the Office of Telecommunications Policy. This will contain of the order of 35 high-level professionals. I don't think they'll have that many for a while, because if you were to put 35 high-level professionals in a White House, you'd have exhausted the manpower pool for this kind of thing in the United States. There's a lot of people who are in the telecommunications business, but in terms of total policy making, which means a sensitivity to social and economic and political policy issues for the government, international issues, and so on. If you ask for people who know technology, sociology, economics, political science, international politics, you want all in one skull. There's just not very many skulls around here that have been programmed for that kind of thing. That office will be backed up by a new agency, which will be created in under my general cognizance, an outfit that will be known as TRAC, T-R-A-C, which stands for the Telecommunications Research and Analysis Center. It will have a large number of people in it. The actual numbers are now being fought out in discussions with the Bureau of the Budget. And the word fought is probably as good a word as any. In an era of austerity in which we're trying to beat inflation, everything that the government spends is scrutinized very carefully. We are asking for additional money to carry on a program which we think will not only enable us to do the policy analysis, but to rectify some of the obvious problems in the country. two problems are obvious. One has to do with the fact that the states, by and large, are very poorly organized to manage their telecommunications work. They're not tied together in any rational way that gives them advantages in purchasing and standardization and operations. When one state decides to purchase a piece of equipment, there's no simple way for the results of their testing to be transmitted to the other states. There's a lot that could be done there to save money all around and improve efficiency, the scheduling of types of equipment and channels and so on. We solve the problem, for example, various highways, particularly in the western part of the United States, really should have special communication channels so a motorist starting up a mountain pass can find out what the weather's like on the other side by seeing on a sign tuned to such and such a frequency. And then we should allocate frequencies for that purpose and so on. Well, those things just haven't been done, and it's ridiculous for the states to do them individually. Another area, coming now to your interest, is that we are desperately short in this country, short of people who are competent to work on telecommunications systems, systems development, and systems policy. And so I have proposed that we include in our budget about $1 million the first year and $2 million the second. This money to be given in, as grants to colleges and universities, a selected number of them, to develop telecommunications work in the field of telecommunications, which would have two kinds of outputs. One, studies of specific issues, which would be fairly broad issues, and people who, having participated in those studies, would then be prepared to enter into careers in this field, either in the industry or in government, the states as well as the federal government. That program is the one that I discussed with Senator Stevens and suggested that we would like to, Alaska was one of those states that had a sufficiently important and difficult set of telecommunications problems that this university would be a place in which it was logical to think of such a program. Now, I've had 25 years experience in academia, and I have no illusions about the ability of a university to respond to a challenge like this. And while I am in office, I intend to deal very firmly when talking with universities. That is, I would like to see a program. I'd like to see some evidence that the faculty really supports it, is interested in it. And if I do see that, then I would like to be generous in its support. I don't want to deal with a half-hearted approach on the part of the university. I have written proposals for many years, and I know how to read them. I know what questions to ask. I think there's a genuine opportunity here to do something.
They shouldn't appoint people like you.
I think there's a genuine opportunity here for university to do a number of things which need to be done. In the first case, this is one of those kinds of things that a university can do, and students who work in this will know that what they're doing is relevant. Secondly, it's a chance to break out of some of these terrible disciplinary barriers that have locked us into the problems we have today, where you can get a man who understands Maxwell's equations, electromagnetic theory, and hasn't the foggiest idea of the political process, or doesn't understand or give a damn about economics, or for whom the concept of the viability of a social institution has no meaning. Or I can talk to economists who think that it's a trivial matter to build a transmitter and receiver to bounce signals from here to a satellite and back, and who thinks that somehow or other this is going to be done by people who took a course at one time just after leaving high school. That there's just no depths of understanding, and I'm very anxious to see people come out of universities, out of programs that will give them this kind of depth and understanding and this desire to go on with their learning in the areas that they don't know. And I'm looking for universities and colleges to be creative about this, to be experimental, to try different things. Law students who would take some special courses with engineering students, perhaps joint projects in which the students from the different disciplines work together in a genuine team so that they're teaching one another as they go, with perhaps this kind of a project extending through a couple of years, not just a one semester shot, that sort of thing, and the university having an involvement in it that's fairly heavy. Now, I said we're having trouble getting the money. It's not assured. The timing isn't assured. Therefore, we have thought of the possibility that the University of Alaska might submit a proposal less extensive than that, but a way to get your feet wet, way to get into the game. Submit a proposal to the National Science Foundation. They are starting up a program dealing with interdisciplinary studies. And you might very well cook up a modest interdisciplinary program involving yourselves and students and aimed at some of the central problems in Alaska, perhaps even aimed at, for example, if you talk with Dr. Hayden here about our study, where we're going. I think anyone that studied that material a little while would see that there are vast areas to be looked at that will not be encompassed in our study. And you might start picking that up in order to get a jump on the state and its problems. And if you did submit such a proposal, I think it would be quite proper in submitting the proposal to state that you had done so as a result of talking with me and with Dr. Hayden. And when the proposal gets down to the National Science Foundation, it will be sent to me and Dr. Hayden and others for comment. And if we can see that it is indeed relevant and shows an understanding on your part of what the game is all about, we would be very firm in our support to Dr. McElroy that this is something that ought to be done. So you have a good shot at something. It's good all around. This is why the Congress appropriated the money in the first place to the National, appropriated to the National Science Foundation. The foundation itself is now looking for opportunities to generate this kind of relevance. And the state has a need. So it's a natural package, and it's now your call. excuse me, Ed, did you want to add anything to that, or did you want to suggest anything?
No, maybe just that there are certainly plenty of opportunities that are showing up, and the results are trying to assist the state here. But there are many things that we will make a start at that we won't have a hope of finishing. The question of legislation,
what sort of
legislation should one have for regulation of public utility in the state of Alaska in order to meet Alaska's peculiar and specific problems? What should be the constitution? What should be the strength? What should be the staffing of the Public Utility Commission? What sort of arrangements should the state government itself have to handle this telecommunications problem here, to get the public interest injected into the proceedings? If you knew my background and knew that I'm the guy that knows the Maxwell's equations and so on, you'd realize how strange it was for me to be talking like that. But there's where the heart of the problems lie, the problems we're running into.
If we don't solve that problem, you're not solve any other problems.
Technological.
You know, I think you'd go on and say that another area we've observed is this, that communication systems are fairly complex. It would be very helpful to the state if you had a good computer model of the whole system. And then you could play with what happens if you tack on another leg. And also you can go back, and that's, if you had such a model and you had it set up so that it was easy to play with, maybe your economists could say, this is what our engineers are telling us. Now they could play with different rate structures and look at the profitability of the whole enterprise. What I'm tremendously interested in is this prospect of finding a way for your people in the Department of Economics, Department of Political Science, Department of Engineering, if you have a law school, when you get a law school, so they can all have something in common to work with. Well, the common thing you have to work with often is the hardware, and if the engineering school has the competence to develop a good computer simulation of the system, which has an input-output which is in ordinary English, so that you can play with this as though it were the real thing, then an economist could come up and use that, and we would begin to see a genuine interdisciplinary contribution, because it would be up to the engineers to satisfy the economists that what they had produced was in fact something they could work with. And the economists in turn could start asking questions to the engineers, who could then go back and and say, well, we could put this kind of a system in, how would that work? And so on. That's a kind of...
With the interdisciplinary approach, it seems to me that we can get even a little more fundamental than that, and it would tie in very neatly with your view on how this ought to be handled. Alaska, as you're probably very well aware, is more than a fifth the size of the rest of the United States. And we have about 268,000 people. And if we put the military aside for a moment, and then look at the natives as a block of about 63,000 people, we don't have a whole lot of people in this very vast area.
Mm-hmm.
And 7/10 of those people have come up here since 1940. This means that we really haven't learned to think together yet.
Mm-hmm.
And because we haven't learned to think together yet, it's rather difficult to work together. We have a very disparate, widely dispersed mix of people and activities, and even geographic locations. And it seems to me that, and this, of course, poses tremendous communications problems.
Not technical, but interpersonal communication,
right,
yes.
Right. Technical problems, I think that we have the know-how here with a tremendous physical institute and very fine Department of Electrical Engineering and other departments around the campus to help us there, and they've done, fortunately, enough research around the state and above the state, over the state, over the years, that they could handle that. I think, then, that since we haven't learned to work to think together, therefore to work together yet, that this communications is the bridge. And I think this is how we would probably want to think about this. We have these representatives here today. They're interdisciplinary already, and we have had a previous meeting which was even more interdisciplinary. And
what's that mean?
Pardon?
What's that mean? I mean, a previous meeting was more interdisciplinary.
Well, we have other representatives.
I see. There were more
from
more
other
variety,
areas,
greater variety.
Other disciplines.
Could I just ask you some questions for that?
Sure.
Let me be a devil's advocate. Very difficult about all this. We've been through this kind of discussion several times before. The last specific occasion that involved my institute significantly was with the Department of Transportation. And then there was a magnificent scheme for the development of Arctic transportation systems that was mooted. Then came the change in the administration. All the contacts we'd made disappeared. They're no longer interested in Arctic transportation systems, and the whole thing is dead and pigeonholed. Now, I've seen this happen several times. There's no question that what you're proposing and what they were proposing then is absolutely needed.
Well, I'm not so sure about the previous one. Did I respond to that?
It was. Oh, yes, we responded.
No, let me respond to that point.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very important economic principle involved here. If you can do the same thing cheaper by another method, you will. Now, if you plot the costs of a unit operation for labor, materials, energy, transportation, they all show an upward trend with time. If you plot the costs of a unit of operation in telecommunications, this is still a downward trend because we are in the midst of a fantastic revolution in the technology of communications. Consequently, while the price of everything else is going up, the price of communications is going down. Therefore, there is a move to substitute communications of one sort or another, for those other things. You don't put in a big highway if you can have a better communication system. And why you are seeing now a shift from an emphasis on better transportation systems for Alaska to a concern on our part to better communication systems for Alaska is that in terms of what this state can afford and in terms of what it needs, you would do better to have a big bureau of telecommunications than you are to have a big bureau of public roads.
Yes,
any,
this might be.
Or any other system like it.
Again, I was referring really to systems analysis. That was
yes, but...
I mean, we were talking $200,000, not $1 million, actually. But
right.
It was a study. It wasn't that we were going to play any part in the the subsequent development of this. But it did involve a massive amount of work, and this kind of thing does. And I think...
On your side.
On our side, right. And yes, you've made your point, and I'm picking up this point, really, that you've written a lot of proposals. We live by proposals. 90% of our funding comes from the federal government. We're very familiar with programs like the interdisciplinary one that's been set up under Joel Snow down there, and I know him well, and we've already talked about many possible lines. Last year, we wrote from my institute more than 70 proposals. So, I mean, we're very familiar with this game, but we think twice before we launch into a massive amount of work.
All right.
Now, what I'm really asking is, how serious is it, you see? I mean, I'm being difficult, I know.
No,
but it is possible, within the competence of this campus, to do, as I listen to you, the kinds of things you're talking about. We may have to bring in some outside consultants in certain areas. Law is one of the obvious ones, if this was to be a significant part of it. But even within the main disciplines that you've listed, there's enough real established competence, and I mean established at the level of people who are working now on federal grants and contracts in various areas. So there's no question we can do this.
Mm-hmm.
But I think twice, because we have many ways to go at any one time. And I think twice before we begin to pull together the kind of team that takes perhaps 6 weeks of my time in order to really get the thing organized and to all the correspondence with consultants we may need. Other questions come to mind that all bear on this. For instance, how much in developing any telecommunication system would one depend upon the ability that already exists in so many government laboratories, in certain of the laboratories, the Boulder laboratories of ESSA? Clearly they have a level of competence the University of Alaska does not have in almost every branch of technical side of telecommunications. Groups like SRI have a very broad competence in this kind of field, and we're familiar with all this. We think about what could we specifically contribute by pulling together an interdisciplinary team and ask how much of this really would, in the last analysis, go to one of the established laboratories, NBS, ESSA, or something else before. I'm just trying to bring out...
I think you've got four or five things tied together that I'd like to separate because I think it'd be helpful. We were not looking at the University of Alaska primarily as a place that we were going to, where we were thinking of establishing, you might say, a national kind of laboratory. You might well get there, but I have been thinking of Stanford, and I've been thinking of other places in the United States where one might put federal money to produce a competence, a source of manpower, and the rest, because it would be a national resource. I was looking at the University of Alaska as a place that ought to be helped now because the state of Alaska needs help and it's a unique situation. So I didn't think of you as in competition with SRI or Stanford or with some of the other institutions. I was not thinking of you that way. And secondly, I think you'll have to test the water. I can't promise you how much money I'm going to get because I don't know. I have to face a series of hurdles in requesting money in this tight year. And so as an interim measure, I have suggested that you ought to see what you can do with NSF. And I think it would be worth your time if you have a man who goes down to NSF to talk to Joel Snow about this and see what he has to say. And if he gives you the same kind of positive indication that I have, in fact, it's much more important that he give you a positive indication than that I do, because it's his money.
Well, he's looking for ideas. You're absolutely right in making that point. Right now, that's a brand new program.
And the reason I suggested this to you is that I'm hoping to be a kind of marriage broker or something in here.
Channel you to
his money until such time as we've got ours.
Yeah.
And now, the extent to which you ought to invest your time and energy and the size of a post you ought to make should come out of your discussions with him.
Yeah.
And then there is if you really want to make this thing fly and get NSF to feel very, very pleased about what you're going to do, you ought to try to persuade your own state to give you some backing towards that, either so that NSF can say, look, we are helping the state of Alaska. We're putting up this much, and they're putting up so much. Now, you know the ways to make that show up in the proposal better than I, and I'm not going to record my views on how to do it here.
Well, it's required automatically to a small extent anyway. Cost participation generally rule runs out in order of 10%.
But I think the concept of that they're really coming in here to get a program above critical size, the state money plus NSF money would put you above critical size, enable you to do certain kinds of things. this would be very good.
But please don't think I'm being negative about this. I'm just giving you a little background about ourselves at the same time. We're very familiar with the proposal game. And,
but I think there's an explanation for the shift from transportation to telecommunications. I think that the responsibility is yours to decide how much it is to invest, and I'm only suggesting that opportunity. Now, you can watch the budgets and hearing, and on the day that you read that the House Appropriations Committee has approved X million of whatever it is we asked for, then you'll know that you can come run down to my office and with a proposal, because we'll be in business. If we ask for, say, 10 million and we get 2, don't bother.
Yes, yes.
Well, oftentimes we'll know how much you've got, but not how much you asked for.
Yes, you will. Yes, you will. Obviously, you don't read the appropriations hearings. You get somebody whose game it is to do that, and they'll tell you. You can even find out how much we asked the president, how much we asked of the Bureau of the Budget, and how much the Bureau of the Budget allowed, and then how much we asked the Congress, how much the House allowed, how much the Senate allowed, and what the joint appropriation was. You get all of those figures, and it's very instructive to see them. For example, if, as in the case of the Maritime Administration, the people asked for a certain amount and they got the same all the way through the process, you know that's a fat program. There's lots of money there. And if it was chopped drastically, you know that they're just struggling at that agency just to keep personnel busy.
By the way, has the final NSF appropriation been determined? I know the general amounts that have been wrangled about, but it was running between about 490 and 530. It's in that sort of region.
But I heard that it had been, and it had been slightly increased as it had come up on the high side. Another reason for...
Because that will affect Snow's program too, quite likely.
Pardon?
That may affect Snow's program as well.
Yes. Well, a lot of times you get stuck in for a special purpose, and then you don't know where you are.
Yeah.
I have been concerned over the decrease in Department of Defense funding in state and colleges and universities, and the long-term impact this is going to have on the state of technology in the United States. And therefore, I have been urging my colleagues throughout the government to begin to incorporate university grant programs in their programs and not simply rely on the NSF to pick it all up. Mm-hmm. I think that mission-oriented research is important. I think there's a limit to the amount of free research funding that makes good sense. I have seen more often than not fundamental contributions coming out of mission-oriented activities. And I have seen when people are supposed to work on fundamentals without necessarily having a mission, they often lose their rudder and the quality begins to suffer.
Oh, yeah. Well, some of the first-class work in the U.S. during the last 10 years has been done, sponsored by ARPA, after all.
Yes.
Really excellent work. Glenn Hill has been involved in that.
Well, I don't have to tell you there on that, but I think this is not understood outside of the scientific fraternity, and
no, this
is not
why
well understood in
the
Congress.
This is why I think the Mansfield Amendment is so deplorable. I mean, I think this can really cut the ground from under the military themselves by closing their contacts with the universities in many respects, but perhaps you don't want to get into the politics of that.
Thank you for being so
nice. You mentioned in the program that you hope to have yourself both the possibilities of research and a teaching program to develop people. Would you care to put priorities on that in your own view?
Well, I think that a grant program would be one that was made with a very great concern for the production of people. I don't know just how far to go in giving you my personal assessment of the state of American universities and their ability to make strong technical contributions. But one strong wind is that most of the important books in technology today are not written at universities. When I go talk to the go talk to the, you know, next time you have a book salesman in, if he's in a technical area, ask him where the authors are today. And they're going to the industrial research labs, a very large extent, or them, or the Stanford Research Institute type place and so on. That doesn't mean that the colleges have dropped to zero. It just means that they don't play the big role that they once did. And so when I go to a, if I have a problem that I really want solved, I seldom think first of a university. If I have a problem that I want studied and worked on, and I hope maybe there'll be some ideas, and it's very important to develop more people in that area, then I go there. Now, I can show you spectacular counterexamples, but I'm saying in a statistical sense or a probabilistic sense, if I have to assign probabilities to it, I assign a higher probability to getting my job done by going to one of the think tanks.
Pushing a little further with the production of people idea, do you see the kinds of people that you're talking about who are going to be in demand, both at the national level and I think you're quite right that here in Alaska there's a need for these kind of people right now. Do you see this as a graduate program as opposed to a
graduate? I see the master's level program, but I would urge you to here I'm doing something that a federal official ought to not do, but nevertheless I have to. It seems to me there I'd have to break rules now and then. We have to talk about educational philosophy. I'm not particularly interested in your cranking up the turnout 30 master's degree candidates a year or some number like that. That's not what I'm interested in. I'm interested in knowing that you're going to have a program that's going to involve a number of students, some of whom won't go on, but this is their major profession, but which will enable a reasonable number of students to go through this program and come up with an image of themselves and their relationship to society that says, this is a field in which I can be a contributor. I am an economist, but in order to be a good contributor, I've got to learn how to work well with engineers. And I've got to understand them. I even took this course or that course. Or this is a fellow whose major is in mathematics, but he participated in this research program and in this special program. And as a participant in it, he began to realize how to do applied mathematics with respect to these systems problems and to take into account the kinds of things that need to be taken into account. If you go into Bell Labs, you'll find some people there. You find a man who's a mathematician. But when you talk to him, the systems that he's modeling mathematically have incorporated into them a realism born of a familiarity with what the ongoing problems are. And I am not at all enamored of programs that purport to prepare a man to work in a field, like, say, we're going to produce people to work as telecommunications policy specialists. We don't know how to draw a program for that, because that game keeps changing anyway, and when you get out, you're obsolete. But if you have a program that maybe as a research effort has a large number of students and a few special courses which they all take in order to work on a program, and you're drawing students from different disciplines and they're working on this as a team, and they learn to think across interdisciplinary lines, and they may still get their regular degrees. This, to me, would be a healthy kind of thing. I'm not at all sure that we wouldn't just ruin universities by piling on top of them a whole sequence of specially ordered and designed programs to produce people to meet specific occupational needs.
Well, that's not what I was driving at all, but here at the university, there is already in existence possibility for any student to, with his committee, design his own interdisciplinary MA or PhD. And in fact, I just finished chairing such a committee that crossed a couple of disciplinary lines, and I'm sure that others around the table have had the same experience. And the point is that we take a person with his bachelor degree competency, his own professional experience competencies, if he's been out and working and so on, and determine what it is that he would like to investigate further, and we design a program specifically for what he's interested in.
But what I'm thinking of now is that what I'd like to see you do would be to develop a program which would attract people, such as you have described, to work in it together. So that there were seminars in which there were the different disciplines represented, and there were some tasks that you worked on, so that they worked on these, and we would begin to see some theses coming out, so that the student in the Department of Economics submitted a thesis, but the thesis had to do with the economic aspects of rate-setting policies by the federal government and their relationship to the economic viability of a growing modern technical communication system. And then if we could discover that in doing that work, he had made very strong use of the engineering school, and he had made very strong use of the people in political science. So his thesis, while it was an economist's thesis, reflected that kind of realism. Then I'd say you had a good program.
Just take a look at what we've been trying to do in setting up this study program to meet a real situation, not just to do an academic study, but to meet the real situation that exists here. The fact that the state is faced with the need to control, regulate, guide a new utility entering in. The people that I've tried to gather around the program include a person who's good in communications, common carrier economics, a person who's good in the legal aspects of it, persons who are good in the technological aspects, switching systems and things of this sort. No one of those guys encompasses the knowledge as a whole. No one of them understands all the problems. For God's sakes, I don't understand all the economic problems that are involved here, but I'm sure as heck learning a lot about them through the contact with Dick Gable that I have. I don't understand all the legal problems that are involved in the regulatory process, but I'm learning a lot about them through contacts with Fred Denniston of the FCC and through contacts with Bob Lowe, who's been in the regulatory policy area. There is, in a sense, a working group that's doing the same kind of thing. It's aimed at a problem, not a problem that any one man is going to encompass.
I can visualize you're having a project office in which you're working on a problem, probably for relating to an Alaska communications problem. For example, how are we going to get a decent educational communications system for taking care of people out in the bush? Now, to do this, there's a whole series of problems relating to the design of the system and its economic viability and who should pay for it and those, all of those questions. Now, you could pick out some pieces of that, or maybe the total issue, and decide you're going to work for the next 3 years on that, and then draw students in, and you pay them because they're working. I suppose your students all do so elsewhere. They have to work to stay in school. So you put them to work on that kind of thing, but they are drawn from different disciplines. You don't have it all based in one department. And then there are faculty members, and they're interacting because they're getting paid. And out of that interaction, they finally decide, why don't we have a joint seminar with these students? And so what do you know? The students are not only working, but they're studying something in which the faculty has agreed it was a meaningful educational experience, meaningful enough that it has degree credit, not just part of the project work. And we are getting what we want on that. We're getting quite a subsidy. And that seems like a happy arrangement. That's the kind of thing I would be looking for.
And again, it's the idea of drawing students from different backgrounds, although, and within their own programs, they'll have different emphases. Yeah. But the problem is common. And
I think you ought to reach down into the undergraduate level. You ought to start picking them off at the senior year, not waiting until they're graduate students. Because I think it's terrible to let these students go along for 4 years, one, without any sense of that they're beginning to play the game, being to be important.
I'd like to second that, because I can remember my student days clearly enough to realize that the people who really had an influence on me were in two groups. One, certain individual professors who stimulated me particularly, and two, other students who were farther along than I was, who helped me see things that were coming. And this contact of undergraduate students with graduate students could be as useful as the contact with the
when I say undergraduate,
good professors.